This is Hitchhiking Off the Map. A while back, two close friends, separately, had serious car crashes. One recovered immediately. The other is still gaining the use of her legs and struggling very hard to pay the bills. So we got to thinking. On this series, we've devoted shows to the experiences of childbirth, of being a war veteran, but what about that other modern rite of passage, the impact of metal on metal, which marks many of our national holidays and causes major life changes when you least expect it? So we'd like to spend this hour with people's memories of that transformative event that has really become institutionalized in our culture, the car crash. Where were you going?
Where were you going?
What were you driving?
What were you driving?
Where were you coming from?
Where were you coming from?
Oh, let's see. That would have been a Honda Accord, which was my very first ever new car.
A little white Honda Civic.
I'd never had anything that actually worked, you know.
I was driving a Plymouth.
An LS400 Lexus sedan.
It's a little minivan.
Good car.
It's a Volvo station wagon, so it's a safe car.
It was an international travel-all. They're kind of an overblown station wagon on steroids.
A Toyota Camry.
It was a Nissan Sentra.
I think it was a Chrysler product.
It was turquoise. And it was an accordion after that, actually.
The car was a 51 Pontiac that I had.
I think I was driving the Oldsmobile.
Mercury Ford Company made a car called a Cougar.
Oh, a Subaru Brat.
I think it was called a something 6000. It was,
yeah,
I forget the brand of the car.
It was a 67 Ford Thunderbird.
I was driving a mid-size Ranger pickup when we collided. And she was in a 96 Saturn with dual airbags and all that, but the car just came apart.
Imagine that every year in the United States, 40,000 people died suddenly in random killings on the highway. Roadside bombs, freeway snipers, 40-some thousand. And another 1.4 million were injured, 500,000 badly enough to be hospitalized. Every year, from terrorist attacks, 110 a day. Imagine, would we move in troops, declare martial law? And it spreads worldwide, 1.2 million dead, 40 to 50 million injured. Those are the statistics of car crashes.
Where were you going? Going, going, going. Where were you coming from? Coming from, coming
from. In the winter of my sophomore year, going back to college.
It happened to me when I was 9 years old. On our way home from church.
It happened 2 days after I quit smoking tobacco. And was on my way to the doctor's office for a stress test.
I'm going to my chiropractor, okay?
To my mother's physical therapy appointment because she was in a wheelchair recovering from her car accident of 2 weeks prior.
I was heading east on 580, and I just had a good day, and I felt good. And I thought I was looking good, you know?
I was coming back from a pop culture conference in Santa Cruz, and I was really excited. My synapses were all kind of firing, thinking about all these really great things I'd heard about. And I was noticing this one car acting really strange, like probably about a quarter of a mile ahead, just kind of, I thought maybe they were racing their friend or something. And I'm like, oh, God, in the rain, this is such a bad idea.
Visiting a friend in Humboldt at a homestead quite remote with a very tricky, dangerous road in. It was very narrow, and there was like a 50-foot or 100-foot drop into a river and so forth. Just thought, you know, just let me get through this road, and I'm home free. And got through it, breathed a sigh of relief.
We were coming home. I'd picked up my daughter at a dance downtown. And I remember there was a Rolling Stones song on the radio, and we were kind of singing, dancing to it.
I was dropping my daughter off at high school. On a beautiful day, beautiful morning, absolutely clear, roads dry.
Yeah, I was thinking, what a lovely day. I'm just going to kick back. Beautiful, beautiful weather.
And I'm late, and I'm eating my breakfast in the car, and I start to pick up the coffee. And as I'm turning a corner, somebody pulls out in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
and he was driving, and we were in a Ford Pinto. Do you remember those cars that used to blow up? And we were on a windy road, and I was sleeping, and I woke up to just a wrenching crash. I mean, we had crashed, but I was sleeping, and I fell under the dashboard, and I looked immediately over to see where the driver was, and there was nobody there. And I thought, oh my God, I have to get out of this car because it could blow up. I'm in a Pinto, you know, and where is he? And I ran from the car, and he was laying on the pavement, on the street. And some people sat with me until the ambulance came. And my two sisters came to get me the next morning, and they were like crazy. They were so scared and so worried, and they lost the car in the parking lot. We couldn't find the car to get home, and the rest of it just, they're supposed to watch me to make sure, because of concussions and things like that, but they would sit by the side of the bed and just stare at me. They would just sit there. Like, all the time, I'd wake up in the middle of the night, there'd be a sister staring at me.
My wife and I were traveling across the Bay Bridge, and all of a sudden, the car, a fair distance in front of us, makes a U-turn, starts driving right at us. And I can get one lane over, but not two, because somebody's coming by and he's still swinging around. But the car swings all the way around, and then he's heading back the way he came, and he's sitting there like this in the front seat, his hands over his eyes. I mean, he must have just been as panic-stricken and more so than we were. He's sitting there in the front seat with his hands over his eyes, you know, like, and as we go by, and not a scratch on the car and not a scratch on his car.
So in 1986, my parents were in a car accident. I'd been on a date that night and come home to a couple of voicemails saying, "Suze, call us." My sister calling me. So it was 2 in the morning, I called and found out. There's been a horrible accident. Pause, Dad's dead. Mom's in critical condition. And when I went east to help her recover, and I was driving her to a physical therapy appointment, we were in a car accident. I tried to swerve, but there was really nothing I could do. But the second metal upon metal hit, my mother and I were shrieking. I mean, beyond the scale of what it was. It just so hit some deep chord in us. And when we were still shrieking when the ambulance came, and I'd calmed down and enough to say, "Listen, we're really okay. It's just that my father and my mom were in an accident 2 weeks ago. Dad died. She was in critical condition, so cut us some slack and let us be weird." And then I'd start screaming again. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever screamed as loudly as then, ever. And Mom went back into the back seat, and I sat next to her in the back seat, and this is what I remember vividly, was being in the back seat with other people sort of in a haze around the car, waiting for us to be done, screaming and crying, and me holding her hand. We were screaming and crying, and then we'd look at each other and laugh and go, "We're not really hurt. It's just, it's so much, yes, I know." And then we'd go back to screaming and crying. I'm sure it was only a couple minutes. It felt like half an hour.
It was so fast that there wasn't, I came around the corner, so I couldn't see him. And it was
the traffic stopping and coming to an abrupt halt, taking a breath because I didn't hit the guy in front of me, looking into my rearview mirror and realizing that this guy was just not going to do
and
it.
And when I looked up, I saw in front of me a small car turning somersaults in the air. So I hit the brakes.
And she was getting sleepier and sleepier, and the guy sitting in front with her said to her, "Don't you want to let Sequoia, that's my grandson's name, let him drive?" And she said, no, I'm fine."
So, what's it like?
Do you remember the sound?
What did you see?
How much time did you have to react?
Was there a time distortion?
What was it like?
Do you remember what you did when you saw it coming?
What was it like?
And I saw this car coming toward me, and that was that thing of, you know, your life flashes before your eyes. I just saw, like, events in my life, and I saw my job that I was going to and not getting there. And then I saw the car really, it was like 2 feet away, 1 foot away.
And then, of course, all hell broke loose for an amazing, amazing amount of sound. It was the gates of hell ripping open without anybody unlocking them first.
Pictures of lots of blood, and there was just this instant adrenaline rush and this terror that went through me.
This scream, a screaming metal. It was just overwhelming in sound, and my arms and legs are flapping up against things.
Sort of falling back on my Catholic schoolgirl past, you know, oh, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for sinners. Oh, no.
Yes, unforgettable sound of metal on metal.
The sound vividly. The crash is incredible crash.
It's a gnashing
and
sort of
I remember seeing the hood come up.
Kind of sound.
And a grayness that was
it's almost
somehow,
like shattering glass.
I'm
it's
not
a
really
sound
sure
that you don't ever
grayness.
Forget.
I can still see the picture in my mind.
It just was this
when I came
really
to,
loud
I remember
crunching.
People screaming.
It was popping.
Yelling.
Things popping. Things falling out of the dashboard.
And it's just terrible.
Pushing in toward me and coming in slow motion.
Breaking glass.
Closer.
And just
closer,
that impact.
Closer.
But then
closer,
the interesting thing is
closer.
The silence.
It was like in a silent movie almost. It was like, and it was like in slow motion.
I think all car accidents kind of feel like they're in slow motion.
Felt like an eternity.
Time definitely changes on you. It seems to slow down and stretch out.
It was
and,
like sort of like in slow motion. You knew what was going to happen and had no power to stop it. And then just to watch this truck, the flatbed part, swing slowly towards your car, knowing that any minute, you know, and just waiting for it to happen.
And then there was this profound silence. Everything stopped, just stopped. And nobody breathed, nobody moved.
It sounded to me like something had hit a wall. The front of his car was maybe a foot away from the back of my head when the car was all crumbled up, the bed of the truck. And it's like, bam, like something hit a wall. And the wall was me and my little dog. And then the dog hit the windshield and bounced off the windshield and turned and looked at me like, why'd you do that?
And that was the, I guess, sixth or seventh car. And then there were eight others that followed on top of that. And I had this constant feeling of being hit again and again and again.
And lo, he didn't hit my fender. He hit right behind the fender and pinned me up against the concrete barrier, and my cab was getting squished. And so every time I go down that ramp nowadays, there is the Webster Memorial scrape down there. It's a deep, long gouge down the concrete as my energy and his combine to drag me down, and my girder-like bumper is scraping this concrete barrier.
I'm in the far left lane of the freeway, and I look behind me to the right a little bit, and here's a car heading right toward me, coming across all the lanes of traffic and heading right towards me like it wanted to hit me. I remember thinking, even though it must have been in a second, why does this person hate me? Why are they coming after me? Is it the CIA or something, you know? And it just came straight. And I tried to speed up and avoid it. I tried to slow down. I couldn't change lanes because of all the cars around me. And bam! And the steering wheel twisted really hard in my hands. And my left wrist just snapped. I could hear it just go. And it was all distorted. And I was crying. Because I just hurt so bad, and everything was ruined. You know, it was like in that split second, I had this, nobody knows where I am. Maybe my wrist is broken forever. I'm left-handed. And I just started crying.
And of course, when he realizes that he's way off the road, and we're going pretty fast, I'd say probably 80 to 90 miles an hour, he overcompensates with the wheel and gets us back up onto the pavement. But at about this point, we're approaching a bridge, and he proceeds to like hit one bridge railing, and then the car bounces back and forth between these two bridge railings and is spinning around. Everything else was so fast and violent and loud because you're hearing glass breaking, metal grinding, the car skidding, the movement.
And something got shoved and hit my knees, and it seemed as though just before the car entered the inside of my car, it just stopped.
Yeah, there's a detachment, I think, for sure. And we were both thrown around inside of the automobile. Neither one of us is wearing seatbelts. And I can't tell you how long the car spun or bounced off of railings. And then we came to a stop in the middle of the road. And he was in the back seat and I was in the driver's seat with my feet over in the passenger seat. And his first question was, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm okay. Are you okay? And he says, well, then we got to get these beer cans out of here.
And there was this just silence.
You're listening to Car Crashes.
Well, let's not do the obvious. We could talk about the absurdities of marketing, the selling of the automobile not as a hunk of machinery to get from one place to another, but as freedom, sex, potency, independence, power, the good life, all that. We already know all that. We fall for it, but we know it. We could talk about how we've structured our culture to require cars, how we can't do without them, how they make suburbia possible. We could talk about the real beauty of the engineering. I mean, there's a beauty there, a real human achievement. People actually love cars. I had a friend who'd listened for hours to the recordings of race car engines. He was a classical musician. We could acknowledge how automobile safety has improved and there are actually fewer fatalities per million miles, even though we are now driving many more millions of miles, and so it stays steady. And we could talk about how the design of cars and highways and traffic laws is based on the premise that human beings are a lot more competent than they actually are, and about money and politics and why public transportation is not remotely a priority, and get very depressed. And global warming. But let's keep it simple. 1.2 million dead, 50 million injured. Or in the US last year, 42,000 dead. Not to mention other species.
Well, the first car accident I was ever in, and I've been in about 13, but the first one happened 13 days actually after I'd gotten my license when I was 16 years old. I was, 16 and enjoying my first experience driving about by myself, and I think I was going about 85 miles an hour, and I came upon a herd of deer right in the middle of the road, and I'd just come over the top of a hill, so they were immediately right there before I had any chance to slow down. And of course, at this time I was vegetarian, I was an animal rights activist, and I just destroyed, I think, three deer with that car. And the radiator, moved up into, the engine block, moved up into, almost into the front seat, and the car was just completely demolished. And of course, my first thought was, is the deer okay? Oh my God, The next day, the state police came out to measure the skid marks and, all that kind of stuff. And they were like, you weren't going the speed limit. But they also found the deer, which had run off into the ditch, and I hadn't seen it because it was nighttime. And they made sure it was dead, and it was very not deer-like anymore.
And I kind of sort of came to, and I was bleeding, and I was holding my nose, and my little sister was passed out, and my older sister was out of the car, and she was kind of crying.
I'm going straight, and he's going up on the freeway, but he's on my right-hand side. So he had to run into me. And I said, now why did he want to do that?
I came to, there was just dead silence, and then people started to yell. And then somebody finally pulled my door open, and I had peeled my whole scalp back, and my
tongue had been bitten in two and my hands had been broken.
Actually, I was shaking afterwards, but yeah, in the moment, that sort of, I can't be afraid because I don't have time. I'll be afraid later.
The thing that hurt was my neck, so I assumed that my neck had been broken.
I don't know if I could survive this pain. It felt like my head was still, my brain was bouncing back and forth in my head. And so I tried to get out, but it was a gravel truck, and the gravel had poured down on my car. So it was about up to the middle of the wheels. So I was trying to push my way out, and I was in this horrible pain.
Put on an emergency room table. It's very interesting because they plunk you off this stretcher, and within 3 seconds, all your clothes are gone. They snip your clothes off, and I remember still kind of thinking, oh no, that's my best shirt.
I woke up kind of slumped in my seat, coughing, trying to get my breath, and spitting blood.
The $43,000 worth of tests in about 2 hours, and there was no other than some broken bones. There was no permanent damage.
I was laying there with my hand hanging out the window, my tongue lolling out of my mouth, and the officer comes up and he said, you should be very careful, young lady. Don't you know that telephone poles are very unforgiving?
I went to a gurney, and I asked about the other people. And they said, oh, God, we can't even get near them. You know, they're so drunk and out of it, you know. And I said, they're drunk? What do you mean they're drunk? And I hopped off the gurney, and I was going to go over there and just, like, kick the crap out of them. I was so mad,
so,
you know.
When I got to the hospital and met with the family, was finally led to see him, he looked like nothing so much as 100 pounds of ground hamburger. He'd been wearing a helmet. But he hadn't been wearing the leather armor that you should be wearing when riding around on a motorcycle at 120 miles an hour. There was definitely square inches of his body that weren't road rash, but pretty much everything was. He looked like a bunch of hamburgers to a bunch of medical equipment.
I went over to the junkyard and I looked at the pieces of my guitar, and that's when I just fell apart. And I think, isn't that funny? I mean, yeah, it was a nice guitar. It was a really nice guitar. But, you know, here my daughter's life and everything, it takes somehow something mundane somehow to remind you of what it is you're going through.
A little sports car. Didn't quite judge it right, but he managed to stop or dodge me in time. And it shook me up so much that I went about a half block, pulled over, and cried for a while and just shook. It had been a tough day already. It was just the one thing too much. But it was like, no, not again. All right, I'm over it. Thanks. Now, can I go home, please? I was just trying to get home.
One thing, of course, about car crashes is if you survive, they make pretty good stories.
When I was 16, I had a learner's permit, and my dad wanted me to practice. And so we said we had to go out on Saturday. We were going to take the cat to the vet. And my dad said, you've got to drive. We had a 1941 Chevy. You had to shift, and you had to open the window and put your arm out to signal, and you had to do all these things. So we're going down the road, and he's saying, you shift, put in the clutch, why you let it? And I'm getting very rattled, and then the cat gets loose and jumps over in the back seat of the car. And the window's open, and I say, oh, the cat's going out the window, and I'm trying to roll up the window, and crash, we... There was a stop sign, and there was somebody stopped at the stop sign, and I plowed into it, and I totaled 1941 Chevy. And I stood there and I held the cat and I cried and I cried and I cried, and the policeman kept saying, little girl, are you all right? And I kept saying, and it was a very traumatic experience.
I was driving in the fast lane, the left lane, and there was somebody driving on right in the slow lane. I was proceeding to the fast lane when they decided to make a left turn into me. You see, they wanted to go to the liquor store, which was on the other side of me. And rather than slow down to get behind me to make their left turn, they sped up and connected with me. And, of course, my little gray Dodge was just spinning around, around, and around. And therefore, I came to a dead end. I jumped out of the car, didn't want to crash. And they were
God, I just graduated from college. I was living in LA, and I was working for an independent film company called Zero Pictures. So we were all on this shoot out in the Salton Sea. It's this sort of man-made lake, and there are rotting fish on all the shores. The stench permeates everything. It's vile. It's really an amazing, surreal place. So the producer was this English guy. I got a page, and there was like the proverbial payphone in the middle of nothing. So I pulled over to use it, and he like says something, and then he like just snaps, and he's like, "And don't you ever talk to me again without a pen in your hand." And I like just like slam down the phone, get back in my car, which was, you know, full of mannequins. I guess we didn't have anywhere else to put them, so they just got stowed in my car. And I got in my car, and I was just so tired and just hot and sweaty and cranky and sick of sleeping on the floor. And so I just, like, I hit it. And 95 miles an hour down a desolate desert highway, and, you know, serious road rage, and just wanting to be kind of anywhere but there, and figuring if I drove fast enough, that's what would happen. 20 minutes. And I'm sure I must have missed other stop signs, but 20 minutes later, I missed the wrong stop sign. And missing that stop sign coincided with an 18-wheeler coming down in the perpendicular direction. He didn't hit. He just missed the driver's side door. So instead of, like, killing me, he hit just behind it, and my car spun a 360 in the middle of the highway, and I'm just sitting there, you know, hands on the wheel, kind of going, oh, this is interesting. Then the car kind of stopped, and like suddenly, I don't know where all these people came from, but there were like 8 people surrounding my car, and there's this woman with this like panicked expression sitting there like rapping on my window, open your door, and I'm like, huh? And I get out of the car, or what was left of the car, and I look around, and like the window had been busted through, and there were all these like plastic body parts littering the highway all around me. I mean, they were everywhere, just arms and you know, these bald heads with the, you know, they were like the 1980s mannequins, so they had like the faces painted, and they were looking up at the sky, and the ambulance came, and I don't know what happened to the mannequin parts, you know, but I that was probably would have been a lot more cinematic than anything that wound up in being shot on that film set.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.